Hey creatives, welcome to the podcast. My name is Courtney and I'm so glad you're here. Each week we get to hear stories and insights from leaders in the Catholic creative world. Today's guest, Chris Pasegan, is someone I probably wouldn't tag as a creative right off the bat. And that just goes to show how much I have to learn from him. He studied accounting in college and is currently the chief operating officer of a sports risk management platform. And he has so much insight into what it means to retain a deep purpose throughout everything he does. On this episode, he shares about the journey he took, from feeling valued only for what he could produce, to knowing his value, and not feeling like he has to earn it. This freed him and his business partners to invest a lot in their mission, even when they have to value their purpose over some short-term financial payoff. This is a great conversation on the creativity and integrity it takes to make important ideas happen. It reminded me how necessary it is to learn from creatives outside my field, especially when they're as passionate as Chris. Enjoy the podcast.
Chris, welcome to the podcast, man. It's good to have you.
Thanks, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
It's been a long road to get here.
It's been a long road. I mean, yeah, we met last year around this time, kind of.
Yeah, back in February.
Yeah, we shared being short and having attitudes in common.
Napoleon syndrome.
Yeah, little man syndrome, trying to be bigger than we actually are in front of people and talking about that as like some vulnerable stuff. And since then, we've just been bros. So I'm so pumped to have you on the podcast. I'm so pumped to have gotten to have you at the summit. Now you're like collaborating with all of my friends and consulting with our company. So it's been a wild ride, man. A great brotherhood.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about it. And thank you so much for having me.
So you're a big deal as the CEO of a tech company, doing pitching for fundraising, a lot of time spent talking to a lot of people with a lot of money. But you're also a salsa dancer, so I just want to get into Chris and who Chris is. So like, whenever somebody asks you what you do, what do you tell them? I mean, you got a pretty different background, so I'd love to hear that.
I was gonna say, when I went to Catholic Creatives, I do remember, I forgot who said it, but someone was like, "Yeah, so you know, we have all these creatives here. We even have a lawyer and an accountant." And I was like, "Oh man, I'm the accountant."
an accountant.
I was like, "Please don't define me like that," you know. But I would say my biggest thing, what I love to do, is I think of myself a little bit as Disney World, right? Like I want to make creatives' dreams come true. Like if you're creative or you have creativity or you have vision, like I get a lot of delight out of being a service to that person from an operational standpoint. Mm. So like you may have this amazing idea, but what does it actually take to execute and make that happen? What are the structures that you have to have in place so you can, you know, save yourself from yourself, right? the relationship
straight shooter, man.
I mean honestly, and so this and I'll probably get into through the podcast the CEO that I work with right now. You know, we met 3 years ago. He's a devoutly Christian man and I have so much respect for him, but when we first met, we were two totally different people. He had this amazing vision that he just wanted to make sports safer for kids. And I played rugby back in the day. Like I gravitated to that vision and I knew that my goal in life or my mission at this point in time that I wanted was to make sure that Tyree was successful. Mm. Because if Tyree's successful, then his vision is successful. And if his vision is successful, then that creates impact, true impact mission in the world, right? And so that's, you know, we've gone through a lot of tough times together, being really, really broke. But it's been an amazing journey and an amazing ride so far.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about Players Health and like what you do there. Just a statement about it.
Yeah. What so, is it? Players Health is a sports risk management platform. We've created a bunch of risk management platforms that help make sports safer, and in turn, we sell insurance on the back end. So About 3 months ago, we pushed out a free electronic abuse reporting tool so that kids under the age of 18 who are in these youth organizations finally have a voice. They have an ability to go out, go in there into their app or go on the website and use a chat bot to say, I've been sexually, physically, emotionally abused, harassed, etc. That report then goes up to the executive director or the manager of Safe Sport. And ultimately, because of the Safe Sport Act of 2017, which is a federal law now, you know, anything that is sexual in nature has to be reported to the cops within 24 hours or their major fines, criminal charges, et cetera. So we developed that. We developed a free electronic reporting, injury reporting management system. So concussion protocol, return to play protocol. When kids get hurt, making sure that it's documented and they go through the right steps to get them back to play safely. I had multiple.
So why did you care so much about that?
Yeah. So my role is the chief operating officer of the company. So I'm basically the number two to the CEO or number two or three to the CEO. There's really three of us. Tyree Burks, who's the CEO, Neil Mitchell, who's the president of insurance. And then I'm the COO. So, you know, Neil and I are kind of helping out Ty wherever we can. So basically my role is to help pull together the day-to-day operations of the company, you know, HR, customer service, that sort of thing, and make sure that we have processes in place to operate like an effective professional company. And that's kind of, a lot of that is kind of filling in the gaps where needed. I also do a lot of the financials in terms of like the P&L, balance sheet, all the accountant stuff that...
Oh, man, you're killing me, Chris. You can't say P&L on this podcast.
All the creatives are just like tuned out. They're like,
oh, yeah, we just lost everybody.
But yeah, so I do a lot of that stuff. And really, it's just from a business standpoint, like what do we need to do to make sure that we're operating right, correctly, or effectively?
So why did you get so pumped about that mission?
Oh my gosh, that goes way back. Long story short, I played rugby at the University of Notre Dame for 4 years, played for a Filipino development seven side in rugby for a little bit. And I can't remember how many concussions I've had. I know it's at least three or four. There was one time where, and I'm going to preface this with, I was not smart when I was in college. Like I made really, really bad decisions, especially when it came to my health. So I was out playing
rugby. Didn't we all? Yeah.
So I had a game 1 week, went out, got concussed, was a little woozy, but I was like, all right, well, fine. Doc took a look at me. He says, you know, you look fine. We'll get you back in next week, but make sure you come see me first, which I must have forgotten or disregarded, because the next week we played against Indiana University. I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go out there. Forgot to get checked by the doc. And within, I'd say 15 minutes, I got dump tackled, which is someone picked me up and like dropped me straight on my head. I was basically way, way out of it. I don't remember any of the situation. Like people were telling me afterwards. Well, one thing is they asked me to name 10 fruits apparently. Like I can't even do that not concussed. You know? I get past like strawberry, blueberry, banana. I can't do that regularly, right? That's just an unfair attack.
Yeah, like all of a sudden past six you're getting into some like abstract territory.
Exactly. But ended up in the hospital. So when I kind of came to, I was in the hospital. They were checking me every hour to make sure that, you know, I didn't have any major brain damage. I lucked out. I made a stupid decision. And I later on in life, I realized like this is something that really affects kids. This is something you see all the CTE stuff that is all over ESPN, all over the news. It's dangerous. And I think for us, we wanted to have a record. We wanted to be able for people to go back and say, you know, I want to be properly returned to play. There's a protocol of like 14 days that you're supposed to wait to make sure that there are no complications to the concussion, right?
How would this have helped you then?
I mean, I would have basically been documented. So the way it works is you document an injury and it shows up for the coach as red. And until I go back and I get a proper clearance form, a doctor form, et cetera, I can't go out and play, right? And so until I'm properly returned to play, they're going to keep me out.
Wow. Gotcha. So it's like a motivational thing for both the coach and for the kid to follow that kind of protocol to stay healthy.
That's absolutely cool,
man. So let's back up a little bit before you became the crazy rugby player that was really risky with your health. Tell me a little bit about just your business background and not your business background, your family life. How did that set you up for what you're doing right now?
Oh yeah, man. Go way, way back. So my dad is first generation Filipino. He came over during the Marcos administration. So basically, our family had a bunch of coconut plantations over in the Philippines. President Marcos came in, nationalized the industry, and my family came to the U.S. on amnesty.
Wow, dude, I did not know that. That's so interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. I mean, I was talking about my grandmother the other day, and we were trying to figure out how we go back and get a bunch of that coconut land back. But I haven't figured out any good ways. But yeah, and then my mom was this like poor farm girl out in DeKalb, Illinois, but she was an amazing musician, a violinist. She played for the Chicago Civic Orchestra for a while. And my dad and mom both met at DePaul. And so my dad was my mom's TA, which is hilarious.
Wow. She's got game.
Yeah, exactly. She knows. I mean, she had dad doing all of her homework, so she was a super smart woman. But yeah, so they ended up getting married, had me, and it's really interesting. So I give that context because it kind of frames up some of the things or things that I thought in my life. So we were Catholic, but you know, we didn't really buy in, as I would say. Like, we were Catholic in name, but not necessarily in, we'd show up every Sunday, but were we really bought in? Probably not. My dad, coming from like the Filipino, the Asian culture, there's a really big thing there, almost a mantra, right? Which is, you are what you produce. Mm. You are your result. You are the plethora of your successes, right? Mm-hmm. And that carried throughout like all of my life, right? When I would play in a basketball game, it was, how many points did I score? When I school, what were my grades? I'm super type A, right? And that kind of was something, like, my parents are amazing. Like, my dad and mom have taught me so much about like life and love and everything. But one of the pieces where I kind of picked up the wrong communication, I would say, is in that area, right? And so I grew up in my life thinking that everything was about the result. Everything was about producing more, to being more, right? Not knowing that I was just loved unconditionally, right? I thought that my love, even though my parents never said this, they never acted like it, it always felt like love was conditional, right? So fast forward, you know, get into high school, and I reinvent myself, and I grow a couple inches, which was really helpful.
Thank God, man. For us short kids, man, those inches, they go a long way.
And in high school, I started to disengage more, right? I was a little bit of a party animal, snuck out of the house a lot of the nights of the week. Mom, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I snuck out of my house a lot. I was kind of did whatever I wanted. It was about me. And then still kept with that, you are what you produced. Make sure you get good grades. Make sure, you know, in whatever sport you play, that everything is dependent on what you do and how good you are. And then that's went to college, played rugby at Notre Dame. And I think college was where I started to really drift away. From the faith. I was definitely exploring, like, I would say I was agnostic for like two, I would say starting maybe my junior or senior year in college all the way till I was 24, 25. And to me, I look back on agnosticism and I'm like, it's really just laziness, you know, like indecision. It's indecision amid uncertainty, right? I got lazy. I didn't go exploring. I didn't want to because, hey, like life was more fun when I was out doing my own thing, going out and doing what I wanted to do, right? I didn't really want to explore. I didn't want to explore God. I didn't want to have foundation, right? Because foundation's scary. I honestly think it's way harder to be Catholic than it is to be agnostic. Because you actually have to say that this world is like it's temporary and that you believe in something and that you stand up for something, right? Instead of getting to do whatever you think you want, right? So I was agnostic for a couple years. And then there was one defining moment where I came back to Catholicism. In my work life, I went to Ernst & Young for a little bit, and then I was at a company called Rent Like a Champion, which was an Airbnb for college football. I was the first employee there besides the CEO. It was a startup company. I was got a big, what I thought would be a big chunk of equity. Grew that business from $1 million to $4 million in the matter of 2 years, kind of us as a team. And then the company got on Shark Tank. So the CEO and the founder got on Shark Tank. I was helping them with prep work and all that other stuff. And it aired in November. And I was subsequently let go just because they were going in a different direction the month after, right? So coming back to it, you are what you produce, right? I was a very dumb kid. And I thought, oh man, I'm going to be, you know, with this thing, we're going to be millionaires by 25. And just like that stupid thought process, right? Or that self-involved thought process. And it all shattered in front of my eyes because everything I did was work. I stopped talking to family. I stopped really seeing my family. I cloistered up a little bit. I would snap. Like it was a really bad time or moment in my life.
This was right after college.
Well, this was so Ernst & Young for a year and a half. So this was like when I was like 23, 24, 25. Yeah, just about. And so I after I got let go, I spiraled like really, really hard because like if you are what you produce and you don't produce anything, like you have no value, you have no worth, right? Down to the core of that belief system. Right. Mm-hmm. And that broke me. Like I remember the first day I went back and I started calling people. I actually called Tyree as a friend, and that's how we ended up like reconnecting again, which like one of those God moments where from struggle comes a lot of beauty. Right. Mm-hmm. So called Tyree, called a bunch of other people, like started looking for jobs that day that I got let go. And then the day after I totally broke. So that time in my life was, it was really, for me, it was really hard because it broke me of who I was. I spent weeks on the couch. There was an imprint of my body in the couch when I would get up from, it was bad. I watched all 5 seasons of New Girl at the time, which was like, it's a great show, but pretty upset, like excessive. And I kind of shut away, right? So I'm still on the couch. I'm still going through some bad stuff. And my sister comes back from Haiti and she comes back on fire, filled with the faith, filled like she is the nicest that she's ever been to me in my life. Mm-hmm. And she, something.
So what was she doing in Haiti?
She was on a mission trip.
Gotcha.
She was on a mission trip down in Haiti. And I saw her and I saw who she was becoming or this change that happened to her. She was radiating at certain moments, right? And I said, I don't know. I was actually getting a little pissed. I was like, I don't know what that is, but like I want that. You know what I mean? Like I don't get it. Like, but mm-hmm. I want that. How do I get that? Like that joy, that peace, that fulfillment, right? Like how do I get that? And And she reintroduced me back to what believing, what faith was really all about, right? And so I went down to a retreat with that same young adult group, that Miami group, in December, and I met a lot of those people. And I, for the first time in a long time, I felt community at its core, and not just a community that was there for, like, you know, community for a shared reason, right? It was a community that was deeply invested into the well-being, the happiness of every single person there, right? Mm-hmm. And every single person cared about you, and you cared about them. And it was awesome. It was awesome to see. And I was like, so this is Christianity. This is Catholicism at its core, right? This is what I've been missing, you know? So that was like the journey that started me on this faith, this amazing faith journey for me, right? And I look back on it and I go, how amazing, right? Like, from me, it was all part of his plan. Like, for me being this kid who I am what I produce, but I had a lot of help and a lot of business guidance along the way. My uncle, who was super influential in helping me develop my business skills, right? All this business stuff was really just leading me up to using those skill sets for the betterment of this world and for Christ, right? There was a sister down in Haiti when I went on the mission trip last year, and she was like, you know what? I prayed every day, Sister Patsy, I prayed every day that I could do something amazing for God, that I would do something spectacular for God, right? And that, to me, that really hit me, because it was like, well, like, it's not about, it's humility, it's not about me, right? So I wake up in the mornings now and I think, like God, just let me do something great for you. And a lot of that comes with struggle, right? It comes with pain, it comes with suffering, it comes with sacrifice. But all of that causes me to grow more. All of that allows me to become the person that he wants me to be, you know, and to carry out his mission. Mm. So
how did that's like a huge, huge paradigm shift, right? From like, I am what I produce to, I guess I'm not sure exactly what the next level would be, but something much more about like, I am loved already, and then I'm producing out of love. Perhaps that would be a good like rearticulation of the belief turned on its head. But how has that changed the way that you approach your business and your work life now? Because I think most people, at least for me, whenever I was growing up, when I thought of like the COO, they were like the bad guy of like the business in a way, like the person that says, nah, that's not in budget, and strikes your dreams off of the Excel spreadsheet or something, you know, or just like, that's not the process, you're the rule guy. That doesn't seem like creating out of love or something. So like, how have you found that applied?
You know, at the end of the day, mission drives everything. I was listening to Wesley's podcast the other day, and it's spot on, right? Mission drives everything. Mission drives the rules. Mission drives the financials. Mission drives everything. And so when I go and I'm the rule guy and I'm the COO and I'm the financial guy, I only do it and I only block ideas and I only check out how viable something is because I want the business to succeed and I want the mission to succeed. If that means you got to spend $1 million to do some campaign to get out to all the kids, like, and it's viable and that's going to complete your mission, then that's what you do, right? I think like there's a really good book that I read. We actually met with the guy. He's an amazing guy, Chris Houston, and the book is called For Goodness Sake. And the book basically lays out, your business has a telos, it has a purpose, right? And from that purpose comes brand and comes culture, right? But from that purpose, everything should be driving towards that purpose. And businesses for too long have been focused on purely profitability, right? And if you focus, like, businesses, it should be adding to the community. It should be helping the community, right? Like, that's the function of business, should be giving back to the community. And so when you look at straight profitability, as a lot of businesses do, as, you know, your shareholders and stakeholders do, you lose a key element of what that business can be. And so what we're really trying to do and trying to build is a business with mission, with telos at its purpose. And everything that I do drives that mission. And so if you want to spend $50 on a pair of shoes, or $100 on a hotel, or $500 on an extra expensive hotel, right? Like, that doesn't make sense to me, because it doesn't drive the mission. Mm. And so that's how I kind of view it. And that's all out of love, right? Like, again, like I said, my job is to make creatives successful, like to make visionaries successful, because it makes the world better.
Mm. So how did you see yourself at that same way before? Like, my job is to make visionaries successful, or is that a paradigm shift that came because of, or on the heels of, like, your reconversion or rejuvenation in the faith?
That's a paradigm shift on the rejuvenation of the faith. Before, it was, how do I make $1 million and then go, like, disappear to Croatia or like down to South America for a while and, like, go have fun. That was that was what I wanted, right? Is just to make a lot of money and then never have to work again. Which,
why did you want to make a lot of money? What, like, was it, like, for the status, or, like, you know, that you were successful?
Yeah, basically, it was status. It was to show I was successful. There's a little bit of there's a little bit of a vengeance piece in me that I'm trying to snuff out. But whenever anybody tells me that I can't do something, or that I'm not good enough to do something, I take that and I internalize it and I channel it and I prove them wrong. Like that's just a personal thing that I do. I think it's a gift that God has given me, and also sometimes a curse.
Yeah. I mean, it's Goliath's sword, you know. I think a lot of ways, you know, the story, like, David slays Goliath, and later on, when he is fomenting his rebellion with David's strong men, and they're hiding in the wilderness, being chased by Saul, he ends up getting, like, going to a temple and being given the sword of Goliath as, like, his weapon. I think it's, like, such an amazing archetypical, like, tale, but I've found that to say some really profound things about how God works within the hero's journey, in that usually the thing that makes you, like, the biggest enemy of your life, somehow, when you've been brought that to God, it's given back to you in a way that's really redeemed. And for me, I think this is one of the things that we share, the rebellious nature of our, you know, like, chip on our shoulder, young punk lives, has become a part of our motivation to, like, make the world a better place in which that doesn't have to happen for other people, you know?
And it's not, I think before it was based on, you know, maybe it wasn't just the money, maybe it was the fame or the being recognized.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that recognition. And now it's just like, it's a totally different motive. And I think part of that, I'll have to be honest, part of that too is due to the CEO. Mm-hmm. Like, between him and I cannot tell you how much I've grown in my faith with him as a brother in arms, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a little bit neurotic. I am numbers based. I am tactical. Like, I sometimes forget to trust, most of the time, forget to trust. And, like, that God will make this happen. I mean, man, we were at points where I was loaning money back to the company, and, you know, the CEO we always talk about this story. So we're dire straits. We've had another round fall through, and we're
another
just
round,
like,
of funding. Most of the creators on here,
sorry,
don't know the business.
So we were begging for money, and people didn't give us the money. They said they were going to, they didn't end up doing it. And the CEO of the company comes up, or he meets Neil Mitchell, who's now our president of insurance, at a conference that he didn't really want to go to. He was almost kind of ready to throw in the towel. Neil meets him and goes, you know, I really like this idea, and I really like this guy. And he says, come up to Canada, and you know, you can stay at my house and we'll meet some people, right? Some potential investors. Ty, at this moment, the bank account's like negative $300. Ty has $70 in cash. He's got and he somehow figures out how to get a flight up there, and to this guy Neil, who he's just met once, flies up there, and Neil proceeds to make a bunch of investor meetings or whatever, and we end up raising like convertible notes, which are basically like loans. We got loaned a bunch of money to get to the point that we're at now, right? Which is where we have a real business model. We have people knocking at the door, right? But if Ty, I'll never forget, Ty said to me, he's like, you know what? All of this stuff is just because of trusting in God. Like, none of it is me. It's all God. And I am just, I'm his humble servant going through this. And for me, he goes, my penthouse dream is God's basement desire for me.
Wow.
Right? And I was like, man, like I'm really bad at this, but like, I gotta start trusting more because I'm an ops guy. I want to figure out what all the risks are involved. But he's helped me grow in my faith exponentially because of working together, you know?
So That's one of the most amazing things, dude. Like, I didn't realize how, when I was starting the business, one of the things that I just did not expect was how much it would be a trial of faith in a way that was like faith applied, you know? Like, how much do you really trust God is a question that's happening every morning, every afternoon, every phone call. And in a lot of ways, the amount of anxiety that I have at the end of the day or that is in my team is the sum of all of the lacks of trust that I have like made, you know, throughout the week. And I think it's just been it's been the most amazing journey because it's shown me how much I am reliant on God and on other people, and I can't get away from it, you know, in books, in prayer, in seminary, in school, in theology, in church. I can get away with not totally trusting in God, but when I'm looking down the barrel of a like huge conflict with a client, the amount of trust that I have in God totally determines how that call is going to go. You know, I can't get away from having to apply and walk out. So I really do think like the mass is a reinforcement for the mission, and the work that happens day in and day out really is like the work of applying faith in God to day-to-day life and to the world. It's just a beautiful way that God has set that up.
Absolutely. And it's a process, right? Like one thing that I realized, and I've heard a little bit before, but like I've really try to hold it to my core, is like, enjoy the journey. You're not going to be perfect. Like I sure as heck am not perfect. Like right off the bat, like it's enjoy the journey. Enjoy the fact that like you get to wake up and maybe you had some failings yesterday, but today's a new day. You can wake up, you can take ownership of it, you can move forward, right? Like you get every single day is an opportunity for you to be better, right?
Dude, tell me about one of the like most formative stories or moments of brotherhood with Tyree, where you went from, obviously like the faith was a big part of this movement, but I'd love to hear about your entry into the company and like rekindling that brotherhood with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty interesting story. So I met again with Tyree after I got let go from Rent Like a Champion as a friend. Mm-hmm. We would go to Moe's Cantina. The guy, he knows I just got laid off, so he buys me tacos.
I mean, it's the best thing to do for a guy that
they
just
were. Were amazing. Tacos, and I got a margarita out of it. So, but he buys me tacos and a margarita, and we sit and we have dinner, right? And he's talking to me, and he's like, "Yeah, well, you know what? I was, man, like, sounds like this is tough. You know, I'm here for you, whatever you need. You know, I may have something for you. There's, you know, we need somebody to come into our company and help out with some stuff, and you know, you might be a good guy for it." So I was like, "Okay, that sounds good." know, maybe that's another prospect. And so his director of partnerships at the time basically said, no, we don't need any more people in the company. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that's fine. Ty, is there any way I can help you out as a consultant? And he was like, yeah, I actually don't know any financials. Nobody on my team knows any financials. Like, you can do the pro forma work. So I started picking up all this financial pro forma, trying to project revenue out works. And I realized that, you know, the company wasn't making any money, right? Or wasn't really making any money. There's no revenue coming in the door. It's kind of like business 101, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ty was, when you get a new product off, you are just doing whatever you can to drive it, right? And Ty was getting in all these great relationships, but he was really driving a lot of it, just him, right? With some help from a couple of the other team members. And so we get to October. He's looking to fundraise in October, and he's looking to get a $1.5 million round. And I'm doing the pro forma work for him, and he says, man, when this round comes through, like, I want you on board. I want you to come on board full time, and let's do this thing. I was like, okay, that sounds awesome. Like, I'm excited. And so I was working that kind of at a school bus company at the time. And a week before the round closes, I quit my job. Because Ty's like, hey, let's get you on. You know, it's time. I quit my job. We get a call the day before the round is supposed to close. And it's the lead investor. And they say, you know, actually, we're not going to do this deal.
Wow.
And so there's Ty and I sitting in a room up in Sport Engine in Minnesota at the incubator they had there. And we're sitting there, and Ty's just like, crushed, and I'm crushed and a little bit neurotic because I'm like, well, I just quit my job, like, geez. And in that moment, right, like, Ty and I talk a lot now about things happen, like, things in life happen that aren't favorable to you or that aren't good or that cause struggle. The only thing that you can control is how you show up every day. The only thing that you can control is how you react to those situations, right? And, you know, I could have reacted a bunch of different ways. I could have stormed out. I could have cried. I could have freaked out. But, you know, Ty and I are sitting there, and Ty's like, man, I got to record this video. I got to record this, because this is going to be a time when we look back and we're going to be like, remember when we went through that? And I was like, yeah, like, we definitely need to. So we recorded a really bummer video about how the round just fell through, like a little vlog, and stored it away. And I told myself, I was like, there's something, like, God wants me here. I don't know why. I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I got to pay my bills, but, like, God wants me here with Tyree to do something. And I don't know what it is, right? So I stuck with them, and I got another, like, part. I was running, like, my own consulting business for a little just to pay the bills, and I would just work with Tyree on the side, right? And that moment that we had where we were in that room and everything hit, and we were just like, God, like, I don't get it, but help us out here, you know? I think that was kind of a really big moment in brotherhood. It's either that or conversations that we have about God, you know, where he checks me, like, I'm freaking out about something, and he checks me and he goes, dude, God's got this, man. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, ah, you're right. You make me so angry, but you're right. You know, I think, and having him check me like that, I think has been really valuable for my own faith life.
So,
I guess, I don't know if that fully answered your question, but
yeah, it totally does. It's beautiful. So, like, tell me a moment of before and after. So this is the after, where Chris is no longer just motivated by rebellion to prove everybody that made fun of him or rejected him wrong, but is and doesn't believe anymore that his value is completely the sum of all of the things that he's produced, but is now about love. So tell me what that looks like. Give me a story where that was in operation.
I don't know. I think it's more of a day-to-day way that we look at things. Like, okay, a big turning point in our business, right? For the longest time, Ty wanted to figure out how to get this in everybody's hands. And for the longest time, I was trying to figure out how to make money to make the company sustainable. And we came to this moment. It was about 6 months, 6 or 7 months ago. And we were both talking about mission. And Ty was talking about mission. And Ty was like, I think what we have to do is give it away for free. We have to give our risk management suite away for free. And previous Chris would have said, absolutely not. Like, what a stupid idea. Like, there's no way we can do this. We're going to have no money coming in, blah, 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 blah. And I just said, okay, man, like, if that's the strategy you think we should take, like, let's do it. You know, I probably pushed back a little bit, but I was asking questions. But overall, I was like, okay, like, this is the strategy. This is the mission. This is impact. Like, let's do it. You know, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but let's do it. And of course, you know, Ty, just trust in God, man. Like, he'll provide. And he has.
How has that worked out for you?
We're probably going to make, like, I would say we're right now in the process of making 5 times as much revenue as we did last year. And that's as of January.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's, we're on the up and up. We have some interested people who may give us money. I mean, we'll see, right? Like, it's a journey, but from that switch or that shift in the business, it's changed everything, right? So I think that's Chris giving out of love. I think it's really Tyree introducing that as the creative and Chris giving in, right? Him saying, like, you're right, it is about the mission, it is about love, it is about, you know, trying to make an impact for these kids.
The crazy thing about that is that somehow the attitude of it's about love somehow seems to make more money anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does.
Explain that one to me.
mission makes more money, right? That's what it is. I watched Tyree in conversations with sports organizations, the former player in the CFL. He's got kids and he cares. Like, he walks in and he cares and he says, like, his authenticity of how much he cares comes off repeatedly when he talks to somebody, right? And you look at that and you're like, that authenticity, that desire to actually help that person, to help those kids, like, that's what makes money. People, it's no matter what anybody tells you, like, business is still relationships and it will always be relationships. And if someone senses that, like, you're out to do right by people and to be authentic and to share in this grand vision and to make the world better, you're going to make more money because people are going to trust you more. Like, instead of being a profit driven, like, super financially based company.
There's something very Catholic about that. Yeah, I think the Pope would agree with you. I mean, I still go back and forth about being like, yeah, this promises more money. Cause it's like, is this, I don't want to be, you know, sort of this, like Joel Osteen, like prosperity gospel guy. Yeah, but there's a business principle there of, like, that start with why, you know, Simon Sinek has been really focused on it, that really is true, that if you are focused on value and on a purpose, on a telos, people actually are built to latch onto that. It's human empathy and, like, human relationship at its core. And so I think there is a truth that you can make plenty of money without caring about people, but there is a light side of the force that actually can be used for good too, you know? And that's what I think Catholic Creatives in a lot of ways is trying to point at, to say that we can build something and also make money doing it and everybody can win. There's, like, a rising tide that God has built even into the way that ecosystems, nature works. And anyway, I just am really excited to be able to see that in your life and also in the community as a whole. And I'd love to,
Oh, I was going to say, and it's awesome, like, to know that a business profitability is just one metric that you base off of, right? We base off of a bunch of them. So it's like number of users on the platform, number of, like, sadly, like number of incidents that have come through, right? We have for the first time been able to make it so that kids can report when over sports over the last 10 to 15 years, kids never report. It's always been the parents, 100% parents. Right now, that shift is starting to change with this platform. We have 20% of our incidents are kids reporting. Like those sorts of things, those metrics should equal the metric of profitability. You know, like, yes, we're here to build a big business, but remember who you are. You know, it's just like for me in my personal life, like when things start going well, or like one big thing that I really latch onto is I think that as an entrepreneur, someone that's part of a startup company, you are stronger with God than without God. You are a better entrepreneur that way, because all the highs and lows that you're going through in your life are consistent by one thing, God. So when you're on top of the world, God shows you, like, brings you down through humility, right? And when you're in the dumps, like, God brings you up with his love, right? And his joy. And so, I don't know, for me personally, I probably couldn't be in this business if God wasn't a part of my life.
Yeah, because the failures can just be so devastating if it's about you. You can't like have hope through them without having faith in something.
And the successes can be devastating. Being someone who thinks that they're all, like, losing a lot of your friends and your family and all that because you have, like, everybody has an ego, but you have a super ego. That's super dangerous too.
Mm, yeah. Seen that. Yeah. I mean, all of my success, dude, it's amazing.
I was gonna say that's why I like to tell the story of how broke our company was.
So tell me a little bit about, like, your experiences kind of reconnecting with other people in business, in other Catholics in business, through the Great Commission Summit or through the Catholic Creative Summit.
Oh man, I mean, it's been really beautiful. Like, one, I didn't even know this existed, right? Think of me being a revert and coming back to the church and, like, actually being filled with faith and finding people who are that same way. I didn't know, like, that existed, right? And then furthermore, I didn't know, like, people that existed, and then people built businesses too that were within that community, right?
Yeah.
It was super fascinating to me. So when Keith invited me to the Great Commission Summit, it was the first time where I was like, oh my gosh, like, these are people just like me, right? These are people who want to share and impact the world and make the world better. Like, that's awesome, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started to, at least, like, and I have a very different skill set than a lot of other people. So I kind of started to poke around and see where I could offer help, right? Because I want to see people succeed, creatives, visionaries, like that. That gives me a lot of joy in my life, right? Same thing with Catholic Creative Summit. When I went down there, there was this guy and he had this enormous beard, and I was super jealous of the beard. And to be honest, I wanted to befriend him because I wanted to figure out if I could actually grow facial hair. But more importantly, we got together and he showed me this amazing game called brand standing, right? And so through brand standing, Tony Vicinda, Mark Guiney, Ryan Bowe, and Michael Marchand, we're all working together on this project that's a really cool pitch project, or it's a card game where people go and pitch their businesses, right? They're fake businesses. I mean, it's a blast. And to know that at the core of that business, the guys who are running it they're Catholic. They want to share in the graces of the world. They want to make the world better, right? Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Like, working with Father Mark Mary of the Franciscan Friars has been a huge joy to me, right? I got together with them and started helping them out with some marketing strategy stuff and, like, getting the Outcast video out. And it was, you know, for getting a video out by ourselves, like it was pretty successful, right? And watching those things happen and watching people, the tentacles of Katha Creatives or the Great Commission Summit start to reach out and touch more and more people, that's really exciting for me, you know?
That's amazing. So talk to me a little bit about, like, what are some things that that you believe that are perhaps different than what most other Catholics believe about the world because of your, like, unique and individual perspective?
That's a good one. I would say...
Did you just pull up notes?
I did. Well, no, because I reflected on this, man. This was a big
part. Look at notes, dude. That's not allowed. It's going to be lame.
Well, to be honest, I have no idea, man. Like, I'm in a journey, right? Like, I was like, oh, man, like, what should I say? Like, I looked at your questions, like, oh, God. No, realistically, man, like, I have no idea. Like, to be honest, we're all believing, and I'd say this, trust is paramount, but everybody believes that, right? But, like, trusting in God is more, it's built in with, like, sacrifices and struggle. Like, God allows things to happen for us to grow. So we have to take those things on with, like, every fiber of our being. Like, I'll be honest, like, giving up my work life was the hardest thing, trusting in God, right? It was the hardest thing for me to do. But I finally have gotten to the point where through, like, a lot of him taking a hammer and, like, banging it over my head, like, I'm getting there, like, 75-80%, right? And then as soon as that's over, I have, like, my personal life that I have to give to him, or my, like, faith life that I have to, you know what I mean? And so...
Your love life, you know, dating life.
Yeah, that's non-existent, man.
That's exactly what I mean, right?
he's already taken that, I think. No, but, like all those things in my life, like, I need to slowly continue to give to him, you know what I mean? And they need to keep giving to him.
How do you do that, though? How does Chris Pistigian give over a part of his life to God?
Mm-hmm, gosh.
In the day-to-day.
A lot of prayer, a lot of note-taking, a lot of reflection. Probably too much reflection because I'm super over-analytical.
Where do you reflect in your life? Give me, like, a routine for how that looks. Say something. Say there's a moment that comes up, a situation where you're like, this is a trial for me to trust in God. How do you do it?
Okay, so I would say first, I go downstairs, because usually I'm learning a little bit of Spanish, because I have some friends who are Spanish, etc. And so I go downstairs and I say one Spanish Hail Mary. And then I just sit down on the ground. There's, like, a room that I have in the back of my house. It's super cluttered now, but I have a room in the back of my house that has, like, a little crucifix and then some bracelets from Haiti, etc. And I just sit there. And I sit there and I, like, dwell on that thing for, like, 15 to 30 minutes, right? And then usually... Usually I'll either come to a conclusion or I won't, and I'll need to, like, clear my head. So I try to do something, like, fun, or sometimes I'll play music or whatever, just to soothe my mind, and then I'll go back to it. But to be honest, like, I do all these things, but it doesn't always bring me peace, man. You know, like, I think that a lot of it's on the job learning too. Like, I can sit there and really pray, but everything that you do every day is prayer, right? Like, I wake up and I'm breathing and I walk upstairs and I greet my sister and Deeves if my sister's awake, and, you know, and I go outside, I get in my car and I drive to work and I greet the front lady. Like, all those things, you do them in a way that's either with God or without God. If I walk past the front desk lady because I'm having a cruddy day, right? And I totally ignore her. Like, is that with God? No. Like, you're putting yourself over the interaction that you could have that could bring joy in that day, right? And so, like, I always try and smile, like even when I'm pissed. Like I always try, and I'm not perfect, like nowhere near perfect, but I always try to continue to like be that person and show up every day as God would want me to show up. Like I like to think of things in frameworks, as I was telling you before, right? And I think there's the man that I was, the man that I currently am, the man that I'm supposed to be as a Christian, like actually me, the fullness of me. And then there's the man that I pretend to be as a Christian, right? And so a lot of the times, like going throughout my day, I can be any one of those people. I can be who I was before. Like I can just totally ignore people. Hey, I got stuff to do. I'm busy, blah, 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 blah. I can be the man that I am today, which is a little bit of both. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still on that journey, right? But I know I'm supposed to be a sort of Christian man. So how do I show up? Do I show up as that Christian man? And then sometimes I pretend, right? Like sometimes I don't know who God wants me to be. I struggle with that a lot sometimes because I go through the Bible and I read the Bible and then I listen to church and I hear, like, as a man, am I supposed to turn the other cheek? But like my personality is it's a little bit different. I'm not going to fight you, right? But I'm going to sit there and I'm going to confront you and I'm going to bring up whatever the situation is and we're going to resolve it, right? Instead of being timid. And I'm not saying that, like, in the Bible, that's the man that God wants me to be, not one who shrinks away from confrontation because, you know, you don't want to get into a confrontation. And so I struggle, man, I struggle with this like all the time. Like it's between, like I was not the greatest person, you know, through high school, a little bit into college. I really didn't like myself. Like I was just doing things for status, for gain, for result. And today I love who I'm becoming, but I'm still not there. I still struggle. I still have things that I need to figure out and things that I need to work on.
Yeah. You know? And the pretending is like the pretending to be like a box of a Christian. It's sort of like this Christian nice guy that isn't really you, but you're sort of fitting yourself into that because you think maybe there's a part of you that sort of you're still unlearning that believes that that's the way God wants you to be.
Oh, absolutely. That's dead on, man. And it's dead on because as for me, as a revert, as like finally figuring out like faith is where I want to be, that with Christ and with God is where I want to be, you know, reverting from everything that I had been taught before, it's a totally different perspective because I'm like, I am who I am. Like I don't even know how to describe it. Like I'm a weirdo and I'm cool with that.
and somehow you're saying that like part of this new perspective is that God actually wants you to be a weirdo and wants to just enable that in a bigger way to be for him.
I should just have you communicate for me, man. You're already in my head, dude. that's exactly it. Because
it's called active listening. Yeah. I learn it by being in conflict with people.
That's awesome.
Is this how you're feeling?
As I'm like crying over here. No, but that pretend person, like I fight, that's the real battle that I fight every day. And that's, I think, going back to that other question, right? It's what do you think Christians don't know is that God, like for Catholics, like God wants you to be the fullness of who you are. Like the fullness of your being, like in him, right? He doesn't want you to be the cookie cutter Christian that, like, you know, you show up on Sunday and you do everything right and everybody looks at you and they go, oh, he's such a great Christian because he's super polished and he's really nice to everybody and all that other stuff. Like he doesn't care about that. He doesn't care what other people think about you. And that was
which
that,
sometimes can be really uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Sometimes me, I wish God cared a little bit more about what other people thought about me.
you say sometimes. For me, it's almost always. but it is who I am. Like, yeah. And I will never be able to change that. Right.
One of the things that I want to point out about this is that like it's full circle here in that your passion is making other people successful, like the best that they can possibly be. And in a way, that's sort of how you're like God, and that God really wants you to be successful in who you are called to be. And every single person, he wants that for everybody. And this is the part of God that you're like really excited about right now. And I think that's, it's a really beautiful thing, because this is a part of God's heart that you are particularly made to exemplify in the world for creatives and for visionaries, is to help them to like be who they are called to be. So really grateful for you coming on the podcast to do that. And then also for all of the help that you're giving everybody in the community. I'm not going to give away your cell phone number for free or anything, but you know, please, if people want to come back and reach out to you for advice or consultation or anything, how do people get in touch with you?
I would say send me an email. So it's cpesigan, CPESIGAN, the number 9 at gmail.com. Awesome. Shoot me on over an email, and if anybody needs anything, I'd be more than happy to help.
Sweet, man. Well, great, dude. Thank you so much for coming on the cast, and really pumped to see where you go.
Me too, man. Thanks.